back to the Scott Stokely podcast. And as promised, I am continuing to be all over the place. And I have with me today Dr. Michael Nucitelli. And he is with, I don't even know if that's the right term, with iPredator. And this is an interesting topic to me because, you know, we live in a world of social media. We live in a world with cyber stalking and cyber bullying and all sorts of things, malicious things that can happen online. A lot of it from the anonymity of one's own home. A lot of them aren't violating local laws, or maybe they are. We'll find out. And I had done a podcast a couple months ago about haters and how to deal with haters and what is acceptable and what isn't. Because as public figures, I believe we are and should be open to people not liking us. There's certainly a level of I am rooting against you at the next tournament. That's not crossing the lines, but yet then it can cross the lines. And now we have this respect for game movement, this fantastic movement to show more respect to the women athletes in our great sport. And some of those there's questions there. What falls into the gray area and what doesn't? Because there's lines, and where those lines are is it's up for debate, and I'm not the expert. Dr. Michael Nucitelli is. So thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me on, and God bless you, and hoping all your followers are both COVID and internet safe. Thank you.
We are trying. Well, they tend to go hand in hand. You can't get COVID from the internet.
Exactly.
We'll add yet, because, you know, with modern technology, someday we may be able to.
I never know. Yes.
So I really want to just start. I have some background on you, but I always like to ignore that because the people listening don't have background on you. So tell me about iPredator.
Okay. Well, first and foremost, iPredator is a global concept that includes 8 types of online aggressors. iPredator, the concept, I first thought of it, around late 2008-ish, I started to, write things down. Not that I'm a fastidious writer, but I finally, wrote it down, and then I ultimately published it in 2009, 2010. And essentially, iPredator is a presentation, a concept that addresses types of online assailants. As when I said, there's 8 of them, ranging from the pediatric cyberbully all the way up to the most depraved, your online child pornography consumer and distributor. So really what it is an information dark side of human consciousness concept. That's my dime to work.
Of those 8, how many of them would fall under the category of illegal?
Well, I mean, it depends. That's a great question that you ask. I mean, obviously, when it comes to pediatric of cyberbullying, unless there is the involvement of kids, sharing, sexually themed images of minors, the vast majority would be online child pornography. Obviously, we all know is illegal. Online child predation is when an adult sexually solicits a child. And then you have the whole realm of cybercrime. But the vast majority of what all of us deal with, and we'll just talk about adults for now, is cyber harassment, cyber stalking, and then internet trolling. Those are the big 3 as it relates to all of us. Now, this isn't to say that cybercrime isn't a huge issue, because it is. I mean, people can get jacked for millions, of dollars across, if not billions, if we want to go globally, due to cybercrime. The one category of iPredator that, by the grace of God, we haven't experienced is a cyber terrorist attack, per se. And, hopefully I'll be long gone before that happens.
So before we get into I can't wait to get into the weeds on this, but how did you get interested in this? I mean, tell me a little bit about you.
Well, my fascination is back in my past life, going back in 2004, 2005, 2006, 2007, I fell in love with forensic psychology. Even to this day, I love to study, what Dr. Samenow, Stanton Samenow, back in the early 80s, had called the the criminal mind, inside the criminal mind. Me, my fascination is inside the cyber criminal mind. So in 2006, which is at my website, I wrote a concept called dark psychology, which is the study and the understanding of the dark side of human consciousness. And again, I was a forensic psychologist, so I was working in the courts doing criminal evaluation, family court, and then civil court. So I've always been fascinated. 10 years ago, I went up to Toronto and I took the psychopathic deviant scale training. Didn't need to get certified. I was just so interested. For folks who haven't, is Google Dr. Robert Hare. He is by far the world's expert when it comes to the psychopath. And I've just always been interested in studying, whether it's studying the psychopath or what religious folks call evil. And that has been my my passion ever since, is trying to understand that dark side, that aspect about us.
So how much... When you look at the, well, I mean, again, it's a pretty broad stroke. Let's look at people being mean. Let's just start at the basics, because I think it's a whole separate topic, the heavy cyber crimes. I think I'm more interested in the things that we find in our community, which is almost people not playing nice. But not playing nice is not to dismiss the damage it can cause, because not playing nice include lies. It can include harming one's career, destroying one's self-esteem. I mean, it's not to downplay it.
Well, if I may, we'll call it character assassination, which occurs both offline and online. And as part of, you know, character assassination, again, this happens offline and online, is disinformation, to where if I want to destroy your reputation, whether it's offline or online, I create a disinformation campaign. I come up with some, you know, set of ideas, of statements that I begin to spread. If it's offline, I spread throughout the community. And if it's online, I begin to disseminate information how you are A, B, and C. So the more I spread it out there, the more, if I'm successful, people will begin to look at you and say, you know, that Stokely guy, I don't know, you know, and that is how it begins, character assassination and the disinformation. But that occurs both offline and online. Why does it occur? Well, I mean, that goes into all of the psychology and human dynamics. Given the fact that you're in, you know, the field of sports, well, I would say a lot of it is competition. I mean, competition can be healthy, but people can become so competitive, not only in a sport itself, but also if you've got competitors that are trying to outdo you, well, that's when it can get really nasty.
I want to run something by you.
Sure.
And really excited about this. I've looked for trying to understand human nature without trying to think.
About 500 years.
We're not black and white. And categorizing people who do bad things as bad people or evil, I think it's kind of disingenuous to evolving as a species, right? You're good, you're bad, draw a line, done with you.
Well, if I may, before you continue, it's called moral relativism, which is basically, you know, moral relativism is the philosophy that not all things that we think is criminal is actually criminal. Case in point, here's a thought statement. An incredibly impoverished man has a wife and child that is starving at home. He's a law-abiding citizen, and now he's forced to either go with a gun is to go rob a store and steal money to buy food to feed his family. More relativism, the question would be is, does he do it or does he follow the law? And so moral relativism basically looks at every aberrant criminal behavior, and it can be seen. I mean, obviously there's some that are truly evil, that you can say, well, maybe it wasn't criminal. These are what are called mitigating factors. I'm not an attorney, legal eagle,
right,
but that's what mitigating factors are.
Yeah, and So this is, I want to phrase this right, because I have limited time with you, and this is something that I've thought for a while, and I want to get your take on it. Because we talk about people that the character assassinations, right? They're going to try to harm your reputation. They're going to lie about you. And again, it's easy to place them as bad. And then somebody explained to me one time, they said, this was their take on it, so it's not my idea. They said, everybody is watching their own movie, right? The world takes place, their movie. Everybody has good guys and bad guys in their movie. And if someone views you as the bad guy, or you, your company, whatever, whatever, when they view you as bad, then they themselves feel good and justified by harming the antagonist, right? In their movie, if you hurt the bad guy, you're the good guy.
And if I may, it's a great point. I mean, we're obviously going into psychology, which I don't mind. Instead of talking to Predator, we can talk psychology. You're talking about the fundamental attribution aspect. And it comes down to, and all of us do this, it's externalization of blame and internalization. So externalization of blame is when bad stuff that's going on in my life, it could be anything that's negative, stress-provoking, as part of the human condition, we are naturally and likely, we tend to blame it on others and blame it on events. But when good things happen in our world, we have the proclivity to take immediate, it was me. You know, we take responsibility for the good stuff, and we push away and we blame others for the bad stuff. And that's called externalization of blame. So that is part of the human condition. I mean, we all deal with that on a daily basis. Some of us, experience it in a more severe manner. And then we're going into access to personality disorders. And if it goes into the true severity of folks out there who don't have conscious, they don't experience shame, well, now you're moving into what's called the psychopath.
Well, how do you view those people that feel they're doing good, even if what they're doing would be judged wrong, certainly to the person it's happening to?
Well, what you've written, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, is that most people believe whatever they're doing, whatever their behavior, they believe they're either doing it for the benefit of their loved ones, the benefit of the community. Now, but when you move into the criminal, cyber criminal, the true eye predator, the psychopath, they know that they're, taking advantage. They know that they are molesting, exploiting, stealing from you for what? Personal and financial gain. They know they're committing an illegal act. With iPredator, that is one of the criteria of being an iPredator, is the self-awareness that you're causing harm to somebody else. All right. This is when we go in with the legals called mens rea, which is intent. You know, the self-awareness and your intent. Are you purposely targeting somebody to exploit them? Or were you intoxicated at the time? Are there mitigating factors for why you engaged in a criminal activity?
What is your guess on percentages? I mean, how many people are harming because they're psychopaths versus how many people are harming because you're the villain in my movie, and if I harm you, it makes me the good guy?
Well, Dr. Robert Hare, again, he is the world authority on the psychopath. He says anytime there's between 1% and 3% of the folks walking the face of the earth that are psychopaths. There's also research that your criminals, which is the axis to antisocial personality disorder, the criminal mind, that also is 1% to 3%. But in terms of, and please, I don't want to be seen as fatalistic, but all of us, if you subscribe to this idea, we all have aspects, dark sides within us, okay? Dark psychology is dark side of human consciousness. iPredator is the information age, dark side of human consciousness in cyberspace. Sigmund Freud called it the id. You know, Carl Jung, who's one of my heroes, called it the shadow. So we all have a dark side. But if we are conscientious, if we are respectful, if we try to practice humility in our life, we reduce that sense. But I believe, again, if you subscribe to my idea of dark psychology, we all have that dark aspect. But by the grace of God and our own morality, we don't act upon it. But we all have it.
Why do people choose to act upon it?
Well, if you think about it, I mean, not to go into evolutionary psychology, but I think in the original stages of human civilization, early man would act upon it for survival, for procreation, for food, for territory. Now we are the apex sentient being on the globe. We have been for quite some time. But the vast majority of the aggression that occurs is for personal and financial gain. And when it moves into criminal activity or abusive activity, such as domestic abuse and domestic violence, that's when that proclivity for aggression becomes illegal. And then when you move and then you add in depravity and perversion, well, this is where you have, which is to me the worst of the worst, is child molestation and pedophilia, where you have grown adults that are targeting and sexually molesting children. I mean, to me, that is on the face of this earth, that is probably as close to pristine evil as it gets, to me.
You mentioned illegal. I looked into something one time. Because, you know, I'm a public figure, and there had been people that had posted things about me that weren't true, that were harmful to my career. Mm-hmm. And I looked into what I could do about that. And I was told they're allowed to lie.
Exactly.
If I could prove that they're lying,
that is correct.
Money out of my pocket, they could be liable for that. If I could prove that they harmed their relationship, they could be liable for that. But other than that, you are allowed to lie.
Exactly. The one thing that we don't have in this country is what's called criminal defamation. I think it needs to be a legal statute, particularly as it relates to living the information. But you're right, is that in a civil court, you would have to be able to show, which is about as impossible as it gets, you have to show the character assassination, the online internet defamation. You have to be able to evidentiary, black and white, show how that has caused you negative consequences in your life, such as with your job, such as being able to get a job. How do you do it? How do you make that connection? It is incredibly difficult. And here in this country, the beautiful United States, and Mr. Stokely, I am the first when it comes to being a believer of freedom of speech. But in a pre-information age world, I am 110% First Amendment freedom of speech. But now that we're living in the information age and thousands and tens of thousands of people can read defamatory, you know, slander, libelous information, I tend to think we have to tweak that a little bit, that First Amendment, and there has to be some legal statutes. You shouldn't be allowed to go and create websites to create online disinformation with the sole goal of ruining somebody's life. But here in the United States right now, it is seen as it falls under freedom of speech, First Amendment. That's got to change.
Yeah, I agree. My first thought when you say that, well, it's obvious that it needs to, but then, like, who oversees truth? Like, that becomes that sounds like a pretty big undertaking.
I don't know. I mean, I was asked this question, you know, do the platforms, the big three, you know, let's say, or the big four right now is Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Snapchat for the kids. To me, these huge open platforms, I think, should have more than just community guidelines. For the last 10 years, I have volunteered after working on the weekends, helping people that have, you know, parents whose children have been cyberbullied, cyber stalked, cyber harassed, some, you know, online child predation. I've helped attorneys, I've helped court system, I've done all this in a volunteer way. And what I see is that there is nothing being done. The vast majority of folks who end up calling Dr. Nucitelli, they have already been to the courts, they've already been to law enforcement, it's fallen on deaf ears, and their loved ones, and God bless their loved ones, have either said to them, you know, you're being melodramatic, turn it off, you know, move on. And the system, including the loved ones, does not understand what it means to be traumatized online. So both the system and our own support systems, you know, act as if it's not a big deal. And that's got to change, because from where I'm coming and the people that I've helped, I believe, for instance, I'll just use stalking and cyber stalking. To be stalked offline is very distressing and it's very traumatizing. But cyber stalking, which is the online version of stalking, I believe is not only as distressing and traumatizing, but I also believe it's even more so. Because with cyber stalking, the big difference is you don't have access to your five senses. You can visually see stuff on your devices, but with offline stalking, at least you can see the guy or the gal, depending on, you know, who's doing the stalking. You can use your senses. In cyberspace, you cannot. And then the other piece about cyber stalking that I think causes more distress is the unpredictable nature of being targeted. For instance, is that, you know, and I'll just use cyberbullying. I was bullied as a child, but at the end of the day, when I was done getting bullied, where could I do? I could go home. I could leave the school. I could leave the ball field. I could go back to my neighborhood, to my friends and my family. But with cyberbullying, today's children, when they leave school, they go home. Guess what? It's 24/7, 365, where the child is cyber attacked, is taunted, is teased and made fun of. So really, they're dealing with that around the clock. The adult form of internet trolling, cyber harassment and cyber stalking, this is what happens to adults. So if there is workplace bullying, they're dealing with a work associate, or let's say an ex-girlfriend or boyfriend that they know over in this environment, and then they can come home, they now have to deal with the onslaught of when they Google their name, or now all of a sudden, all this salacious, horrid information, disinformation shows up in social media. And it's very traumatizing.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, anybody who's been in the public eye will understand to some degree, because it's just a numbers game. You reach more people, you're going to get it. You know, I'm fortunate because I have such a large community, I mean, of people who know me and have known me for decades. When I have received things online that were just out of left field, I don't have to say anything. 30 people will. Right. So like, but that's not the real world. That's not what normal people would have in their world.
Right. If I may, you bring up a great, and this is a tip, is that if you are, you know, slandered, defamed, whatever, I mean, obviously it gets your ire going and it gets you, forgive my New York language, it gets you pissed off. But yeah. Don't engage. Don't get down to the level. The old saying, don't feed the trolls. Essentially, what that means is don't engage them, is block them, delete if you can, and move on. Because the reality is trolls or the cyberbully or the site, they want you to engage. And the more you engage with them, the more they feel a sense of power. Now, the one caveat I'm putting forward is that if that trolling, if those cyber attacks, the defamation moves to the severe level, you may have to do something about it. And that's a whole different ball game. But for the vast majority of being trolled, of being, you know, taunted online, don't feed the trolls, don't engage.
Yeah, I agree. I even to the point, like, I don't like my posts. I always put a little heart instead of a little thumbs up, mm-hmm, on all the comments and every one of my posts. And yeah, if I get derogatory, even just not hearting that one, to me says I'm affected by it.
But so, one of the things for your, it's a, thank you for bringing that up, is that in the comment sections or even dealing with online users and you're bantering, I encourage bantering. So whether you're not that I suggest discussing politics or religion, we right. all know that. But if you're going to whatever you're going to banter about in debate, that's fine. But if it gets heated and it's moving in an adversarial direction, it is, you know, having, if I may say, the culillon to say, look, we'll have to agree to disagree and you move on. All right. So to agree to disagree, I mean, I'm not much of a commenter. I don't spend that much time in the comment, the forums, the message boards. But occasionally in all the educational stuff I post, once in a blue moon, I'll get, you know, a nasty comment. And then I will, obviously, I'll delete it, block them. And if they continue one more time, I have no problem saying we'll have to, you know, agree to disagree. And then I block them and I move on. So that is one small tip that I can give, is don't engage with the person that's trying to inflame you.
Yeah, that's been my experience as well. It was the most important thing mm-hmm. I've found. How much do you feel this has changed because of anonymity?
Well, did you read my website? I call it the veil of anonymity. Thank you. The veil of anonymity is not just, Mr. Stokely, if I want to be completely anonymous and I want to work with myself and my buddies here to take you down using character, you know, assassination, disinformation campaigns, okay, using what I call cyber stealth, that's actually one of the criteria, I can choose to remain unidentified where you never know it's me. The vast majority of my predators of cyber attackers, outside of cyber criminals, if you don't know them directly, you strongly suspect who they are. So dealing with those type of individuals, it's understanding that these people, when they go online, they are, although they're hiding behind a computer screen, the veil of anonymity, because I'm hiding behind technology, I can either remain completely anonymous, I can be fully identified, Dr. Mike attacking, you know, Mr. Stokely, or I can create, as I said before, one of the criteria is cyber stealth, where I use a little bit of online deception, a little misinformation and disinformation, where you suspect it's me, but you're not quite sure. So the veil of anonymity comes into play in those three different dynamics when you are looking to attack another online user.
Do you agree, I should say, that most of those people, if they were standing in front of you, would not say the same things they would say to you?
Most certainly. You know, it's fascinated. Again, and I hate to use it, cyberspace gives people big culions, you know what I'm saying? Where because there's no accountability. You know, we are living in a world right now where, and you kind of brought it up before with the First Amendment, I can essentially go online and say and do whatever I want. I mean, short of child pornography, but basically I can defame you, I can slander you, I can character assassinate you. And what are you going to do about it? Now, you can go to the social media, the community guidelines of Facebook, of Twitter, of, you know, of the social media platforms. But we all know very rarely do they do anything about it because they claim they're open source. They just provide the environment and it's left up to the rest of us. And we know that the court systems right now don't recognize, you know, disinformation and disinformation campaigns. They're not seen right now as illegal and criminal, but this is, you know, the realm we live in. I mean, Mr. Stokely, for your followers, we are at the beginning of a period of history. Okay. They say the information age, you know, began in the late 70s. The birthday of the internet is 1983. All right. So in terms of a period of history, the information age, we are at the very beginning of something that's going to last centuries. So we are the proverbial guinea pigs to where a century down the road, Mr. Stokely, they're going to look back at us and they're going to laugh. They're either going to, shrug and say, what was going on with these idiots back then? Or they're going to look at us as being incredibly primitive, because as you see now, and what they say, what do they call the internet? The wild, wild west. And why? Because there's no rules, you know? And that's what we're living in right now, at the beginning of a period of history called the information age.
Do you see that changing anytime? But before you answer, when you watch, I think it was Gary Stevens or the Mark Zuckerberg speaking before Congress, mm-hmm. and you listen to the decision makers, they knew less about the internet than my mom did.
Correct.
It was bad. Like, I just was in shock with the questions they asked. But they're the ones who have to make these decisions. I mean, can they even make the right decision?
I hope they can make the decision. And again, I'm not pro Politico. You know, I'm not a big politician follower. I did follow some of the, but what it comes down to, and I'm not defending them, Mr. Stokely, but it's understanding that these are guys and gals, men and women that are, I'm in my, these are folks, not to say that they're all in their 70s, but most of them are baby boomers. Most of them grew up during a time when there was no information technology. So they're looking at it in a complete different way. So to them, it's all new. I'm not defending them, but they're trying to understand this new technology. And then what I call, well, it's not what I call, it's called cyber psychology, the study of human behavior as it affects the impact in relationship to information technology. Should the politicians know about all this stuff? You'd think they should, but they don't, and it's unfortunate, so we move on.
How does that change? To just have to let the old guard die out and then be replaced?
Well, and hopefully we get the new folks coming in, the younger ones, the ones that, and again, I'm not, sitting here to advocate, for Donald Trump, but Donald Trump, Obama was a little bit too, but Donald Trump, President Trump was the first true social media president, for all your followers. He would tweet on a regular basis. So that was, for many people in this country, the introduction to social media. Now going forward with President Biden and his associates, it'll be interesting to see if now, did they use social media, and in what breadth and what level will they use it? Or they may not.
Yeah, it's scary. I'm going to anger some of my followers when I say this, if they haven't seen it. But about a year ago, I started campaigning for president in 2020. It was a fun way to make goofy, silly posts. But the main premise of my platform was that I was going to make it illegal to vote after the age of 50.
Okay. Jesus, I'm 56. What do you say, Mr. Stokely? I can't vote?
I was also over 50. So part of the way I kind of hedged my bets here was to say, I'm not qualified to vote either.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not picking on you guys. I'm one of you. We're not qualified to vote. I'm joking, but on a philosophical sense, I'm only half joking, right? The world's changing so quickly that keeping up is just, God, I mean, how could
the other thing I wanted to, Mr. Stoy, is that the other thing during the Trump administration, which many people don't know about, is that Melania Trump had what was called the Be Best campaign. And one element of Be Best was, the reality of online abuse. And again, not to get political, but because media spent so much time trashing Trump, there was never any time spent on Melania Trump's, idea of Be Best. Me being an online safety educator, I was like, yeah, come on. But it never came to fruition. Now that we've got Biden and Harris, I'm hoping that as part of their platform going forward, that they will begin to address, you know, internet addiction, online abuse, cyberbullying, and the impact of mental health and information technology. Any of that stuff would be wonderful.
Okay, so we're talking about the psychology. How does that differ from what iPredator is focusing on? Are you focusing more on the legal aspects of it?
No, I am not an attorney. I mean, I was a forensic psychologist doing an evaluations, but no, I I am not an attorney. I'm not a paralegal, only from what little I remember. No. My website and all of my work is trying to understand the psychology of not just the online aggressor, the iPredator. The iPredator is a concept that introduced different types of online assailants. But I also spend just as much time trying to understand online victimization, the target of those assaults. And for instance, you know, one of the concepts that maybe at a future time we can talk about is called ODR. Offline distress dictates online response. And what that is, my belief is the way my offline life is going, whether I'm happy, whether I'm sad, whether I'm intoxicated, whether I'm, you know, upset with my what, whatever's going on in my offline world, I believe it has a direct influence to what I'm doing online. Offline distress dictates online response. So that is more of the psychology of all of us living in the information age. But ODR speaks specifically to the victim. Because if an individual is upset, if they are discouraged, let's use children quickly, for the cyberbullied child, a child, let's say, is angry at school, doesn't feel that he or she is part of the peer group at school. When he or she comes home and gets online and she begins or he begins to talk about, you know, anything other than really what's going on, the online child predator can pick that up. Okay. I call that IVI, iPredator victim intuition. I believe that iPredators, the online assailant, now, obviously, it ranges from novice to expert, but some of them are good enough, Mr. Stokely, where they can go on your Facebook, your Instagram, your Twitter, whatever, and they can gauge whether or not you would be a good target. Now, obviously, when it comes to children, it's a lot easier to be able to make that estimate, but I believe that iPredators can do it both with children and with adults.
So the difference between, let's say, in the bullying world, I mean, when we were kids growing up, you could pick out the bullies pretty easily. They're the kids that they, right. They lack. They were probably getting the shit beat out of them at home, right? Like they looked like, you know, they looked like the bullies.
Well, the bullies were physically, they had the physical stature. You had to be in a pre-information age world. But now when it comes to cyberbullying, I mean, I guess in some aspects, in some crazy way, you know, it pays honorarium, and you know, to the little guy. Because now when it comes to, let's say, cyberbullying, physical attributes, looks, popularity at school has nothing to do with the ability to target, exploit, and taunt another child's online user. I mean, that's the difference. Now, is that good or not? I mean, is that a good thing? I don't think so. Because to me, bullying, cyberbullying, all of it are manifestations of aggression. And as we know from a developmental standpoint, children do that because they want to be recognized and they want to be seen as cool as part of their peer group.
But even some of that, I see an overlap between the same time. I mean, the mean girls who were mean to the chubby girl at school are often going to be the mean girls who are cyberbullying the chubby girl. But what about the kids that don't fall into that category? And I will not go, I don't take political sides ever, but just to give an example, what about...
If I may. With cyberbullying, we'll just talk about cyberbullying, because cyberbullying right now is I'm sorry, do you want to finish a thought?
Yeah, I want to ask about a different type of, sure. of that. What about the well-intentioned kids who find out that a college professor voted for a Republican, and then so they're going to go through every Facebook post their entire life to pick out things that they can target him for and trash him over, because they're the enemy, they're the bad guys, and we're like, that's not the same kid that you see bullying, except that you see that a lot now.
Like, okay, so I'm sorry, what is the question you're asking?
What's the difference between those kids and those people? Like the traditional bully that makes that moves into cyberspace because they're that type of person. But then out of the woodwork comes these other people, the character assassins that would never have bullied in the real world. They would never bully the chubby kid. They're not that type of person, yet they will bully people with different ideologies, for instance.
Okay. Well, when we talk about, you know, and maybe this is for another show, I have what's called iPredator and then what is called iPredator Bridge. iPredator is obviously you're doing it for personal financial gain. There's a criminal deviant element in order to be an iPredator. The subconcept of iPredator is iPredator Bridge, where the person is targeting you or engaging in nefarious online activity for ideological reasons. But what you're bringing up, a child who is targeting an adult, that is not cyberbullying. Cyberbullying is child-on-child cyber attacks. It's a pediatric phenomenon. But when you use the example of a child, targeting and attacking a teacher, an adult, that falls under typical cyber harassment. Depending on what that child does, if it's all about picking out these links and things and information, and then, you know, saying stuff about them online, that could fall under cyber harassment or trolling. It's not illegal. So, I mean, when we publish stuff online, we open the door to being, you know, harassed, to being, you know, questioned, to being provoked. I mean, that goes with the territory. In a pre-information age world, Mr. Stone, prior to the internet, using your example, those school notes or that stuff, those works, they were restricted to the classroom, to the school, and maybe at most to the county, you know? And if it was really popular, the state, and it was written and it was passed. But now in the information age, stuff that's put online, that's available not just to the community, but the state, the nation, and the entire planet. So now what you're doing is, I mean, obviously, if the content is public, you're opening yourself up to, last time I checked, is 7.1 billion people. Again, I'm hyperbolizing, that can read your work.
So some of the harassment does fall under the category of you're a public figure making public statements. You're open to some of this.
But that occurred in a pre-information age world too. Celebrities, public figures, politicians, whoever is, a public entity, however you want to say that, is open to scrutiny, and they need to expect that they're going to be scrutinized, whatever it may be, whether they are an artist, whether they're a politician, philosopher, if I may, that goes with the territory, you know. Every public figure has detractors.
Okay. I was just wondering about the different type of personality that goes after. When I said kids, I'm thinking I'm old enough where I was thinking like college kids, but they're adults.
Well, if they're adults and they are on their own volition going after somebody, I mean, again, we'd have to do a psychological evaluation. But if they're really doing it and they're doing it in an obsessive manner and they're being incredibly vitriolic, you know, and they're doing it over and over again, you have to guess that there's a good chance that they're access to personality disorder. And we don't have to go into that today. We go into psychiatric illness. Psychiatric illness axis one are people that have depression, mood disorder, so forth and so on. Axis 2 personality disorder are people that antisocial, histrionic, it's your personality. And people that are high likelihood of being personality disordered, as an adult, they will target you 24/7, 365. Now, those that target you may not be personality disorder. They could be engaged in retribution, revenge. They want to get back at you for a perceived injustice of what you've done to them. And you may not even know what they did, what you did.
Right.
Yes.
Gotcha. Because it seems like a lot of the people that do a lot of the cyber harassing are getting patted on the back by people with like-minded ideologies.
That's an excellent point. In a pre-information age world, okay, you just said it. Excellent point. Cyber harassment, okay. In a pre-information age world, harassment, okay. Alfred Adler, I got my doctorate degree from Adler University. Alfred Adler believed we come into this world, we go out of this world, and what we're looking for is to be accepted, to be validated, and to be recognized. Yes. Alfred Adler, God bless him, I think he's awesome. He saw us, just like, you know, many cool people like Carl Jung, is that we are social creatures. We're pack animals, okay? And it's all about being part of the herd, part of the group. Children even more so want to be accepted. So what Adler believed, if he was around now, he would say that the reason why somebody's harassing somebody else, whether it's online or offline, is because they're looking to be accepted and recognized by somebody else. Now, in a pre-information age world, the harassment, the harasser obviously wants to be recognized by Joe and that Stokely guy's hopefully going to give me a high five, okay? But Mr. Stokely doesn't live here in Brooklyn, so he can't be giving me a high five. But in an online world, I do it in an online forum where I'm harassing somebody, and Mr. Stokely, who's living over there in Texas, gives me the nice job, Dr. Nooch. I now experience a sense of validation. And that stokes the ego, and that makes me feel, you know, good about myself. Now, it's all smoke and mirrors, because if you are conscientious, if you practice, if you're a decent person with a good heart, you don't get off on that stuff. Again, it goes back to before, where it's, we'll have to agree to disagree. You know, it's practicing common decency. And one of the things, because I'm sure we don't have much time left, is that what I'm asking people, it's not my concept, it's called digital citizenship. Digital citizenship is the demeanor, how you behave online. And I guarantee, if you do enough research, if you practice digital citizenship, you have a much lower rate of being targeted by all the different of our predators. Now, obviously, it doesn't guarantee that you're not going to suffer identity theft. I mean, obviously, that's cybercrime, but you significantly reduce being targeted by cyber stalkers, cyber harassers, trolls, online chub, and on and on and on. You reduce that probability by practicing digital citizenship. That is being respectful online, and it's not engaging in provocative online behaviors. It's very easy. Just being a cool guy.
Right. And that, and it, so ignoring the things that cross the line, not engaging, not fueling the trolls, works with a percentage, maybe a high percentage of internet predators. When that doesn't work, because these, like, for example, a stalking victim can do everything right, it's still
correct.
So when, but online, that, where does one go when they've blocked, they've done everything, is like, what's their next step?
Really, they're, oh God, well, hopefully we don't have to end this interview in a bad point, is that the reality is, Mr. Stokely, there isn't. Again, as I said it before, we're at the beginning of the information age. One of my ideas, maybe someday, I call it IP3141. Last time I checked, it's been a year, there's 3,141 counties in the continental United States. Wouldn't it be great that if every county had at least one facility clinic that a person can go to, sit down, be heard, and most importantly, be believed and then helped when they're cyber attacked. Whatever the online, you know, the predator is, they could go to. But today, what we're experiencing, as I mentioned earlier, it's victim shaming on steroids. Most folks online, almost all online users that are targeted, it falls on deaf ears. As I said earlier, the courts, law enforcement, unless it's something severe such as child pornography or online child predation, very rarely is anything done about that. And unfortunately, loved ones in the system will say, you're being melodramatic. Maybe you should go talk to a shrink because you're acting crazy. Turn it off, delete it, on and on and on. And that's nothing more than victim shaming.
Well, the one thing I had heard, and not that I'm the expert here, but is that if you do go to the police, even if they can't do anything about it, if you begin to document it.
Oh, most certainly, yes, of course. And again, I have been volunteering for the last 10 years. I can't tell you how many people, hopefully I've helped several hundred folks, but I say that in every conversation. You know, even though, and it does, all your documentation that you bring with you to court or to law enforcement or even to an attorney, 9 times out of 10 falls on deaf ears, but you continue to compile it anyway, because hopefully a day will come where things begin to change to where the iPredator now is held accountable. They're not only identified, they're apprehended, and then they are punished for what they're doing. As of right now, it's not being done, and it needs to.
That's right. I've already taken a bunch of your time. I really appreciate it. Two last questions. Number one, where can somebody go to get more information or to follow you or to, when someone's, if someone is still interested, because we barely, you know, we didn't get into the weeds, where can someone go to get more information? Is it through something you have a resource for, or is there another resource you'd recommend?
Well, the first thing is again, you don't have to go to, it's my website, is public domain, it's educational, it's free. I mean, and it's huge. It's iPredator.co. That is no M after the CO. I also have .org and .net. So any one of those three, go to my website. And as I just mentioned, it is public domain, it's educational, and you don't have to even give an email to print out or to, you know, download any of my content. So that is, you know, but I guess the one suggestion I would give is to take an interest. So whether you're a parent or even if you're an adult online user, is to begin to think about what does it mean for online safety? There, you know, I mean, how, Mr. Stokely, how much personal information do you disseminate or do you make available online? So when I'm saying you, I'm saying to your followers, the more personal information you put out there about yourself, the greater likelihood you have of being targeted. Now, I'm not saying be a ghost and go invisible, but be careful what you share and what you publish. And that would be, you know, personal information. And as it relates to personal information, again, we could do a whole show on this, is sexually themed content. Folks that are in love, they're married, they're dating, one night stands, they live the next door over. Some have relationships, online dating relationships across the country. What do they naturally do? They exchange sexually themed content, which, again, I'm not a prude, but God forbid you and that person divorce, separate, and break up in an adversarial way. Because if it's an adversarial breakup, I guarantee you they will use that content to character assassinate you. And in the worst case scenario, it's called sextortion, where it's sexual blackmail. So personal information, and with personal information, it is making it almost absent, zero sexually themed content that you're sharing online.
Okay. I think that's it's fantastic advice, right? I mean, it should be, but like you said, we grew up without this thing and have moved into this thing in an eye blink. So the final thing was just a comment. Before we started, I asked you, like with most podcasts, so what link do I send to the book you're selling, to the program you're selling? And you said,
well, I don't have a book. I mean, is my website. I sent you the link to the iPredator website. It'd be greatly appreciated if you list it under whatever you're doing. If not, so be it. My goal is to try to encourage people to think. And as you know, me being a psychologist, that's what my doctorate degree in, it's starting to get folks to understand, to think about, because again, I'm not an expert. I am a student of this. I wish I could say an expert. Maybe in 30 years when I'm old and gray, I can say I'm an expert. But it's starting to have an interest in understanding the psychology of the cyber stalker, the psychology of the cyber criminal. Whereas Dr. Stanton Samanow, one of the fathers of modern forensics, said inside criminal minds, what Dr. Mike is saying, inside cyber criminal minds, because I believe it's a whole new milieu or a whole new thing that's going on. Because we have information technology and we have cyberspace, I think things are changing.
Well, and this was what my comment was, is that you're not trying to monetize anything. You are just trying to get the word out, to help people, to educate people, to make the world better.
Mr. Tucker, you want to know my true goal? My true goal before I drop dead is that I would like to see that, as I said, digital citizenship and how to conduct oneself, that class, I believe, needs to be an educational requirement for kids going through middle and high school. When I was in middle school, I had to take health. I remember his name at Rabbi, Mr. Model, in eighth grade. So when I was in eighth grade, I was introduced to, you know, safe sex, responsible drug use, so forth and so on. What I believe now, children of the information age, it needs to be compulsory educational requirement where children take class and they're introduced to cyberbullying prevention, digital citizenship, how to conduct oneself online, because they are, including us, but they even more so are enveloped by information technology. And even the time that a child wakes up, and now with COVID and virtual learning environments being instituted, from the moment they wake up to the moment they go to bed, where are they? In cyberspace and online. So it falls to reason that children need to be introduced to be, you know, how do you practice digital? Be cool online. You know what I'm saying? So that is my true goal, Mr. Stokely, is to hopefully get the federal government, state and local agencies to say, you know what, Dr. Mike? Maybe we should put it in schools.
Well, when you get the survey out or the petition out, we'll send it my way. We'll give you at least a few thousand more signatures.
I'm not doing any petitions. Hopefully my gift of gab will get it to where some politician will say, that's a good idea, Dr. Nicotella. Let's sit down.
That's awesome. Well, thank you again for being on the show. I appreciate it. It means the world to me that you took your time. And to everyone listening, keep tuning in. Thanks.
Oh, thank you.
That's fantastic, man. I could talk to you all day. You sound just like my godfather. He's from the East Coast.
Oh, okay. All right. Cool.
Oh, just there's a certain cadence that you're in Brooklyn, you said?
Yes.
Yeah. There's a certain cadence that comes from that region that is just it's not an accent as much as just a style of communication that's so concise. And like, we don't have time to fuck around. We're going to I got 8 seconds. Say 8 seconds worth of stuff. It's going to come in. Oh, it's perfect.
Thank you. So whenever if you can send me a link, I send it to all my 11 social accounts. And then I also, I work with the chronically mentally ill, so they're not high functioning. God bless them. So my high functioning patients, they look forward. Oh, Dr. Mike, let's see you. And I don't know if it goes on YouTube or if you have something video. Oh, they really like that.
Now do you work with people with autism then?
Let me see. I have two of my patients, again, I am chief psychologist. We work the chronically mentally ill, but two of my 40 patients are developmentally disabled, but they are not, they're on the autism spectrum, but they're not truly autistic, you know? So no, but in my life, I've worked with MRDD, but I haven't in the last 10 years.
Gotcha. I love that. Yeah, I do. I've run 280 events in 280 cities for kids with special needs.
Oh, good for you. God bless you. I knew you had a good heart.
Yeah. No, I do. It's all that is my giving back. So all the events, every one of those events is free for the kids and their families. I funded it all. So, but I, you know, right now with COVID, I haven't run any of those events because it's just too unpredictable. But as soon as we can, I'll be running more.
Okay, well, good.
Hey, thank you so much. Yeah, I'll put all the links up on the page. I'll post it. There'll be a link everywhere. Thanks so much. I enjoyed it. It was really interesting. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Ben, all right, bye.
Take it easy.
Hey everyone, I'm now on Patreon. Click the link below. Not only keep the free content coming with tutorials, tips, podcasts, etc., but get a bunch of free stuff like live stream Q&As, copying my book, voting on topics, behind the scenes, bunch of cool stuff. Click the link down below to join.